George
Romero
of the jungle of the living George of the Living Dead.
Living the sequel we deserve.
This fella seems extra bitey. I had an intro, but that's the new one. Welcome back, folks. It's Movies for When. Movies for When? You want to see a monkey? Part five, I guess, right? Yeah, five.
If you count the original, I believe, yeah.
Yeah, the original, I do count.
What did we
Absolutely
do?
Absolutely, I do.
We did Monkey Trouble, then we did Monkey Shines, and then we did Planet of the Apes. So yeah, this will be five, yeah.
Yep, and I will go ahead and start the episode by issuing maybe not a correction, but righting a wrong. We forgot to give everyone our scores last week
for
Planet
right.
of the Apes. So, rewind, zerp, zerp, zerp. Denny, how would you rate Planet of the Apes?
That's a 50 out of 50 for me. That's a 5-star movie if I ever saw one. Greg once told me 5 stars a feeling, and I had it.
You remembered.
Oh, yeah.
5 stars is a feeling, and I'm also feeling a 36 out of 40. It's a 9 out of 10. I loved the movie. This is my highest rated movie that I've watched, period, in 2025.
Oh, wow.
So I was like, have I gotten anything that high? And the answer was no. So yep. Thank you, Planet of the Apes, for being very good, insanely good.
Literally zero critiques, no notes. It was fantastic.
Had a great time watching it and had a great time talking about it with you. Like I always do with every movie, including today's movie, George.
Oh, I thought we were supposed to sing. I'm sorry. I'm autistic.
I was leading into it. You got ahead of me, but boy, was it warranted. Yeah. George of the Jungle. We'll get to that here in a second here to close out our theme of Movies for When You Want to See a Monkey. But first, we've got to talk about all the other movies we watched since we last spoke, or at least, you know, the ones we have time for. Mm-hmm. I will let you go first. What did you watch?
Man, I've got a few interesting ones. I'm going to start out with something a little more contemporary, dip into my WrestleMania week watches, and then... I'm going to bring us back... Oh, yeah. This is just the movies from WrestleMania week. I watched 22 wrestling shows the week of WrestleMania. Ask me about it if you want an info dump.
I did mean to start this segment by asking you how was WrestleMania and did you watch anything else, but
yeah,
format it how you'd like to.
Sure, I'll throw in a general WrestleMania review. What I'm going to do is end it on a Brendan Fraser thread I followed. It's going to feed into our discussion in this episode. So
love it.
So I want to start with the best movie I've seen of 2025. It is Sinners, Ryan Coogler's Sinners, starring Michael B. Jordan. Man, me and friend of the show, Ren Regalado, have been just texting each other, just everything geeking out about this movie. Have you seen it? You heard of it?
I haven't seen it. I'm dying to see it. The best review I've heard so far in it is that Michael A. Jordan shows up. So...
He's been hanging out with Lindsay Lohan's British twin all these years, I think. Living in seclusion.
That's right.
Michael A. Jordan. That's fucking hilarious. Man, it really, I will say, it doesn't feel at all like it's two actors playing... it doesn't feel at all like it's one actor playing two roles. Like, they feel like two actors are in the movie, and they're not like... Okay. They're not, like, doing, like, cheap, annoying, like, twofer shots, you know, like, where it's, like, obviously someone on the green screen. There's, like, there's like never a moment where I felt like it looked out of place at all that both of them were on screen together, or like, and it was just so fucking well done. Man, it is like, above all else, it's a fantastic story. For those of y'all who don't know, it's basically the classic myth of vampires is, hey, you know the aristocracy, those fancy people that we never see out working, we only see them at night? Yeah, they'll drink your fucking blood. Do not trust them. Mm-hmm. Is essentially what the myth of a vampire is. And that slides really easily into, like, slaveholders, clan members, just powerful white people in the Jim Crow era. And so that's, I'm honestly kind of surprised this hasn't been done more, because it's such a natural fit conceptually. But man, it is just a fantastic Jim Crow era vampire movie with some music and some performances that are going to change your fucking life. And there's a lot of amazing, amazing commentary, subtext, meaning. I will position myself as someone who listens rather than someone who speaks on racial issues. I will let black film critics talk about what that means to them. But holy shit, guys, what it means to me is that, like, they made a badass fucking movie. I'll tell you that much right now. I can't say enough good thing about Sinners. I think it's a 47 out of 50 for me is what I ended up giving it.
Love that.
Very, very high marks. So yeah, I saw that. And another movie that I watched at a friend of the show, Ren's recommendation, is 2008's Speed Racer by the Wachowski sisters. Greg, have you seen it?
I saw it in theaters, and I don't really remember much about it. I think I remember enjoying some of, like, the visuals of it. And I feel like in the last few years, it's kind of had a resurgence of, like, people looking back and saying, like, oh, this is actually, like, really good. And we just didn't give it enough credit at the time. So,
oh, absolutely.
I'd be willing to check it out again. But how did you like it? Did you watch it in theaters? Or
no, this was my first watch ever. I'd been getting The Distance by Cake stuck in my head. And Ren texted me to watch this, like, right when I finished a movie. And I was like, that's a perfect match. And I just put it right on. Like, he caught me at the right moment. And no, I'd never seen it. But man, I think, like, visually it's a lot. It's definitely the Wachowskis taking some risks visually. I don't know that all of them succeed. There are parts of it that just look like an ADHD kid is spamming GIFs all over the movie screen.
Nice.
And yet somehow that also really, really works, even when it's, like, kind of clashing, and even when it's kind of too much, it works for me on some level. And yeah, what's wild though, what's wild is not just the world that they built, but that I was like, man, this actually ended up being a much more culturally salient movie than The Matrix. Like, The Matrix was their warm up for what really was going to speak to a couple of generations of people, because this movie is so fucking anti-capitalist. Like, capitalism is the fucking villain in this movie, and it's, like, I mean, like, there's anti-capitalist movies like John Carpenter's They Live, where he even said, when I first watched it, I was like, that was fun, but a little on the nose, Mr. Carpenter. They literally just see signs that say, like, money is your god, obey, you know? And I was like, but then what I found out about why he did that is he was like, after The Thing was a financial failure, I know my message wasn't very deep, but I just needed to scream fuck capitalism from somewhere. And I was like, okay, I can handle that. That's pretty based, actually. But, like, this is, like, not in a cheesy way, in a very emotionally gratifying and meaningful way, a critique of our society through an acid trip 1950s boomer cartoon reimagined for the big screen by the makers of the Matrix. So yeah, dude, that was a wild one. I think it's a like 45, 46 from me. It was really, really good. I do think for some people, the visuals are something that they'll probably just never get past, to be honest. Like, I can see that just really not working for some people. But like I said, even the ugliness of it worked for me, which was just wild. Oh, man. just gonna dip right into WrestleMania, I suppose.
I suppose.
All in all, I thought that this year's WrestleMania was pretty fun. There were some glaring flaws. There were some stupid things that happened here and there. But generally, I left the evenings feeling like it was like the right people won the matches for the most part. And I felt like they weren't like trying to punish me as a fan for liking their product, which is how WrestleMania used to feel. Man, the internet had a meltdown over some shit. Like, it was the worst shit ever, and I don't agree at all. It just, if anyone who follows the discourse knows what I'm talking about, and anyone who doesn't care. So I'll just say go to Squared Circle if you want. But
yeah, that's just kind of how we consume media now. If it's not making us feel 12 again, it's the worst dog shit you ever seen in your life.
It's kind of true, honestly. But yeah, man, really. My real love of WrestleMania week is that there are so many independent shows, and like, what's so cool about it is like 100,000 wrestling fans from all over the world go to the same place at one time. And also because of cons and all these shows and blah, 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 almost all the wrestlers in the world are like in one place at a time. Mm-hmm. And so you'll see these like insane dream matches that happen on really small shows. Because like there will be like a legend from Japan who's already booked and already there and thinks it might be fun to pop over real quick and just do your little show, you know, like there's just like
while
so
I'm
much
here.
Right. Yeah. There's just so much fun and shenanigans. And, I watched a whole lot of great stuff. This was a really, really gratifying WrestleMania week. I'll just touch briefly on the wrestling movies I watched.
Hell yeah.
I watched a new documentary that came out, WrestleMania 9, Becoming a Spectacle. WrestleMania 9 is a really interesting WrestleMania. It's also considered one of the worst of all time. When I was a kid, it was my favorite just because it's in the Caesars Palace parking lot. And I wasn't really thinking much about like match quality or anything. The whole thing was like Caesar's Palace themed. Like all the commentators are in togas. It's outdoors. There's coliseums everywhere. Mm-hmm. And I was shocked when I got on the internet and everyone was like, this is the most dog shit show in all of wrestling history. that was a rude awakening to the smart mark opinions online for little mm-hmm. Denny. All that goes to say, it's a fun documentary. WWE made it. They always put a stupid spin on things. Don't get indoctrinated. I watched another wrestling documentary from 1999 that I would really love to cover on this show one day. It is called Beyond the Mat. I haven't watched it in a long time, but
I've heard of it.
So it like played in theaters as a documentary. Like it's not like a like super niche thing. And it also came out in 1999 when wrestling was like super culturally salient. And
yeah,
they got some fucking unbelievable footage. Like they were let into like behind the scenes in so many ways, in ways that had never happened before. And that is something I would love to do on the show one day. So I'll just kind of leave it at that. I watched the classic WCW movie starring David Arquette, Ready to Rumble. It sucks, but it's fun to watch. What I thought was going to suck way worse than it did was I watched 2016's Scooby-Doo and WWE Curse of the Speed Demon. I really am in a racing phase. I was surprised that as like a kid's cartoon, I found it pretty passable, to be honest. As something for wrestling fans, I also found it to be pretty passable. I mean, I was like watching it while I was playing video games. I don't think I would have like sat down and had like a, you know, a one screen experience with it. I was actually surprised that like the animation was, it had some personality to it. I was expecting just like cookie cutter bullshit. So that was a surprise. And finally, I finally watched See No Evil starring Kane. It is so fucking bad. It's awful, and that's all I'm going to say about that.
Well said.
This is where I'm going to loop it back in, Greg. This is where it's all going to come back around, because I discovered something very interesting in this process. So after we watched George of the Jungle, Vanessa suggested that we watch Encino Man. Have you ever seen or heard of it?
I didn't see it, but I've definitely heard of it. I know what that is.
Dude, so Sean Astin and Pauly Shore discover a frozen caveman Brendan Fraser in their backyard.
Mm-hmm.
And
I wish
Sean
man.
It's so weird that like Sean Astin is like an unlikable asshole and Pauly Shore is like the funniest like stoner character in any movie ever in this. Like he is just like full of personality. He always talks about how him and Sean Astin are unique weasels and we're gonna teach the caveman how to wheeze, and Brendan Fraser is fucking hilarious as a caveman, and you definitely see probably what got him cast as George of the Jungle in that movie.
Right.
So Encino Man was a like that's probably just like my new favorite stoner comedy of all time. Like that's just a wonderful get baked and chill with something like insanely stupid that's gonna make you laugh. I actually really ended up liking it. But as I was watching George of the Jungle, Greg, when he's in the city scenes, I was like, why do I feel like I watched this in another movie when I was a kid? The more I thought about it, I remember Jungle to Jungle starring Tim Allen.
Yeah.
Have you seen it?
I remember watching it as a kid. Mm-hmm. And because I was, you know, I was watching those two in Home Improvement at some point.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I'm sure that was on. That came out, right? That's how they knew each other from work, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that one stuck with any of us very well as kids. I remember it being a big-ish deal, but I just don't remember it being like having any real staying power.
Yeah, well, don't worry, because I took the liberty of watching it.
Mm-hmm.
And first of all, this is what interested me so much. It came out the same year as George of the Jungle. And it's about Tim Allen. He doesn't know he's the father of an Amazonian child because his ex moved there and didn't tell him. And he brings the kid back to New York. That's the premise of the movie. And it's like a jungle person coming to the city thing. It's okay. There's some pros. There's some cons. It's not very good. The weirdest thing is that the kid, Mimi Siku, who's from the tribe, looks exactly, and I can't stress this enough, exactly like Millie Bobby Brown. Like, it is so fucking insane. Like, if you guys have your phones out, I want you to Google Mimi Siku, Jungle to Jungle, and you are going to see the most Millie Bobby Brown-ass looking kid you have ever seen in your life. Greg looks like he's looking it up now. I'll wait for his live reaction.
I was trying to figure out how to spell Mimi Siku. I'm not.
It's insane the resemblance.
Dude, oh my god. There's like like the sixth Google image result is a picture of Millie Bobby Brown next to Mimi Siku. And I'm 1,000% seeing it.
So I was trying to figure out, you know, the ants bug life of it all with these two movies coming out in the same year.
Nice.
And I actually couldn't find any information. It appears to just kind of be a coincidence, which I guess like jungle person coming to the city isn't that crazy of a premise, you know, like, but it is weird that it happened twice in the same year. However, the interesting thing that I discovered in this process, Greg, is that Jungle to Jungle is an adaptation
of
a French film. And I want you to know the French found an even more inappropriate use of this term than Americans. I'm going to say it because it is the title of a movie. It is not accurate in the term of people from India or Native Americans. It refers to a child from a tribe in a small island in the Amazon. But it is called Little Indian Big City. I don't know why they would call it that.
We found a third way to use that word.
Right! I was like,
great.
You're not even being racist, right? You're like the wrong kind of racist. What the fuck is wrong with you? But I haven't watched it yet. I'm definitely going to. I've needed some space before I basically just watched Jungle to Jungle in French. But it appears from the plot synopsis down to Mimi Siku's name to be like a carbon copy of it, with the The Swaparoo is in jungle to jungle. Business dad promises to take him to the Statue of Liberty. And in racist term, Paris, France, or whatever they called it, he promises to take him to the Eiffel Tower. So,
Sacre bleu, the boys climbing the Eiffel Tower.
Yeah, I part of me hopes it's like an R-rated, like some type of French New Wave film that got run down for like Tim Allen audiences like me, I suppose. Anyway, so that's the rabbit hole I've gone down. I will have more updates on that subject when I feel like I can sit through jungle to jungle in a foreign language. I'll let you know when that happens. I can't. It's going to be a couple of business days, I'll tell you that much. But yeah, that's my full circle, what I've been watching, monologue. Mm. How about you, Greg?
Your squared full circle. All right, hey, so while Denny was busy watching 90s fish-out-of-water movies, I was busy watching fish-in-the-water movies from the 90s. I don't know about if fish works there, but rest in peace to our king Gene Hackman. He gets on a submarine with Denzel Washington and Viggo Mortensen and others in Crimson Tide.
Ooh.
And it's pretty awesome. It's a great movie. It's, yeah, it's they're in a submarine and they get a half of a message that the Soviets are going to launch nukes. Uh-oh. Someone's staged a coup over Russia and they're gone crazy and they've got the nuke launch codes, but we have to dive too deep for communications to avoid another sub, and do we launch our nukes at Russia? If we don't, they could end the world, but if we do, we could start a war that ends the world. Stakes are high, tensions are through the roof of the submarine. It's just fucking awesome. It's just high stakes and high tension. It does a really good job at sustaining that tension throughout 90-ish minutes. You know, it takes like 10, 15 minutes to kind of establish the undersea boat. And yeah, everyone's throwing fucking 1,000-mile-an-hour fastballs. Denzel, Gene Hackman are awesome. It was great. It's a good time. This is like, we've been talking about they made a movie a lot lately. This is just a classic. It's a movie. They don't make movies like this anymore. R-rated for adults, just a singular standalone story that's in and out in less than 2 hours. It keeps your interest and it's a cool story. I really liked it a lot. Crimson Tide, folks, check it out.
Cast like that, how do you miss, right?
Yeah, exactly. Now, I think you briefly mentioned, and I saw on your Critiker, that you were watching some Brian De Palma flicks, and I watched one of my own from 1987. I watched The Untouchables, starring Kevin Costner.
I did not know.
And Sean Connery. It was pretty good. Unfortunately, ACAB includes Kevin Costner being a fed that's keeping people from drinking during the Prohibition. So nobody's perfect. It's okay. It was a good movie. It was, you know, again, it's, you can tell where they're spending the money. They made a movie, but yeah, it seemed like it had a little bit of trouble picking a tone from time to time, so whatever. I'm not mad. I had a good time with it. It's on Paramount Plus. That's right. Now, the next thing I watch is probably the first movie to be inspired by a Critiker review of the week. I watched the original Bad Lieutenant.
Oh my god. The Harvey Keitel?
Yes, which was referenced in our Monkey Trouble one. yeah, I mean, you and I watched Port of Call New Orleans, I think, together,
right?
That
was a birthday party at my house, yeah.
Oh, hell yeah. God, what a great way to celebrate anything. The original Bad Lieutenant, a lot better. Very cool. I see why they made a sequel.
Doesn't shock me in the slightest.
I see why they made a sequel 17 years later.
Werner Herzog didn't even want it to be a sequel. That's why it has such a long, stupid title. He was like, this has nothing to do with Bad Lieutenant. I want to call it Port of Call New Orleans. And the studio was like, no. And he was
it's
like,
both.
Fine. It's going to have a 70-word title then.
Yeah, a real American Psycho 2, call it All-American Girl situation, unfortunately. but yeah, the movie is as advertised. This lieutenant is bad. But yeah, Good movie. I recommend it. Completely different direction here. I watched Portrait of a Lady on Fire.
Dude, that's a bipolar movie everyone tells me to watch.
Bipolar?
I think so. I might be wrong.
I don't think so.
All right.
It's by something. All right, so it is a very, very French movie about a woman in the 1700s, I want to say, that travels. She's a painter. She travels to a rich family's estate to paint a portrait of the young heiress to whatever, the family. Mm-hmm. And it's a whole setup. Like, she doesn't like to be painted, so you just spend a bunch of time with her, get to know her, and then paint her in secret just from your memory of what she looks like, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And the two women wind up becoming very, very good friends, and that's it. Nothing more. If you catch my drift about what I'm at there.
That's like me and Vanessa were back before we started dating.
But in more of a historical, people can't find out two women are in love sort of situation.
Oh, we were historical, all right.
Interesting. it's a good movie. It's there's like almost no music. It's a very tender film. It's just subtly quiet. And again, just two gal pals just gal paling around an island, just being besties.
That sounds like the inverse of The Lighthouse.
Very, very colorful movie. I think you're onto something. This is the anti-Lighthouse.
The dark hut? No, that doesn't make any
outside?
Sense.
Outside?
I don't give a shit.
I don't care. Just watch it.
Lighthearse, because it's girls.
Shut up. Speaking of that sort of thing, I watched... So, our good friend, Luca Guadagnino, he came out with a movie in 2024 called Challengers that I loved very much. It was my favorite of the year. He also came out with another movie in 2024 starring Daniel Craig called Queer. And it was okay. It was fine. I love the guy's directing style, and Daniel Craig was fucking awesome in it, but... I don't know. I felt like we already had a perfectly good Call Me By Your Name at home. So
sure.
that he also made. So, like, come on, man. But it was good. I thought it was a good watch. Maybe a little too art housey for me in some areas, but some good use of, like, miniatures and stuff. Pretty cool stories. It's just, there was something missing. Just kind of felt like something at the core of the movie just wasn't there. And it just felt a little bit... little bit empty. But still, good watch nonetheless. I stayed in 2024 and I watched, speaking of directors whose movies I will not miss no matter how long it takes me to get around to them, I watched Robert Eggers's Nosferatu.
Dude, been finally. Waiting for this. Been waiting.
I finally watched it. I'm glad I finally watched it. And just to kind of rehash what you said last week, zero, like just the one cinematography Oscar nom, and then, like, nothing for The Northman. Like, this guy is such an outstanding filmmaker.
Yeah.
Over the since The Vavitch is still his best movie. That's still my number one of his. But, like, how is this guy not just, like, reeling in by the bucket load, like, filmmaking Oscars? Like, I love how this guy makes movies.
The lowest I've ever rated one of his movies is 47 out of 50.
I think I gave this one the same score as The Northman, but in my head, I think Nosferatu has the edge. And like I assume yours is The Northman as well for fourth place, but it's still, yeah, his worst movie is still a fucking banger. So
it's fourth place because there is no fifth, you know? Yeah. Like, it's not to say it's the worst, like... And it's also like, dude, the difference between a 47 and a 50 is a fucking photo finish. You know, like, they are all so good. Like, I love this filmmaker. I do hate that The Northman did so poorly financially, because, like, it's definitely the most different of the movies he's made. And, like, it is so fucking good. It's got Bjork. It's got Willem Dafoe. Like, it's got farts. It's got everything.
This guy in farts, man. For Nosferatu, though, like, one thing I was not expecting, this whole movie, like, even because we've covered the original movie on this podcast, I don't remember that one hinging so much on the wife's character that in this one is played by Lily Rose Depp. Sorry. So much of the movie, the buy-in for this thing is her performance. So much hinges on her performance, and she fucking crushed it. I really, really liked her in Nosferatu. It seems like they gave her a much, much bigger role, and she took it and ran with it. I thought it was outstanding. It's a really good movie.
Oh my god, I love that movie. I'm like, I already watched it. It came out last December. It's May right now. I've already watched it twice, and I'm like, if someone wanted to, like, impulsively throw that on tomorrow, I'd be all about it. Like, I wouldn't need any convincing. I'd be like, fuck yeah, I'm up for more. I'm like, I actually want to. I might go do that now.
Who do we know that would just put it, like, hey, you guys want to watch The Witch? Shoot, I can't remember.
Sean Hagen, usually.
Yeah, Sean. Yeah. That's who I was thinking of. But yeah, I feel the same about this one. If someone just decided to throw it on, I'd be like, yeah, great, I got time.
Yeah.
If only I had the time. In this fantasy scenario, I have the time.
This is back when we're as old as when Sean was doing the witch bit all the time. When we'd be like, shit, throw on the witch. I've got nowhere to be. You could throw on a 2.5-hour movie.
Except it would not be a bit. All right, the last thing I watched, because we do have to hop on our vines and swing into the jungle, I watched a series that takes place in an entirely different jungle. I watched season 3 of The White Lotus. And
I need to watch it.
It was really good. Parker Posey was awesome. I'm just going to not try to remember names. The guy with the Malfoy guy from the Harry somethings. That guy was also incredible.
I can't remember his name either.
Yeah, I tried to make a note of it. Schwarzenegger's son, also in it. Also very good. I really liked him. It's good. If you like the first two seasons, I seem to be a little bit higher on this season than other people I see, but everyone's still like, yeah, this one's great too, but maybe like the first two better. I thought this one was fabulous, though. All right, Denny, you go ahead. I think we're done with the stuff we watched.
Yep.
Go ahead and hit me with the George of the Jungle theme song while I grab another beer from over there.
George, George, George of the Jungle, strong as he can be. Watch out for that tree. There's something about an ape named Ape. I don't know. It's boomer media. I watched it very late at night back in the day. I was actually familiar with the cartoon. I don't know if you were. Vanessa didn't know it was a cartoon.
Nope.
Yeah, so basically, you know, I was a child with cable. I was fortunate enough to have cable.
Brag about it.
I know. But in the very early days of the Cartoon Network, they didn't have any original content, so they would just show, like, old boomer cartoons all the damn time, and, like, the later you stayed up, the more obscure they got, and I loved it. And this was definitely, like, you had to stay up a little late to see George of the Jungle. I don't know if that's even, like, a Hanna-Barbera name brand one. It might be, but I don't know.
I'll do some research.
Yeah. So, yeah, dude, I really liked this cartoon when I was a little kid, I guess. I don't know. I think I probably liked the cartoon because of the movie. I don't know which came first for me, though.
Yeah. I'm looking here. It was a cartoon that ran from 67 to 70. Frickin' Boomer Denny over here. And I went to IMDb instead of Wikipedia, so I can't see offhand if it was a Hanna-Barbera production or not. My bad, folks. Very strange to adapt a 30-year-old, I guess, at the time, cartoon into a movie.
Well, I mean,
that's
like,
very funny. They did the Flintstones, like, 4 years before.
Well, and they also did Casper right around this time. Like, it was very much a, like, a parent nostalgia pull to get the parents to want to take their kids to see it, you know? They do shit like this now for our movies that we grew up watching, and we weep because we say, why would I ever expose my child to Ghostbusters Arctic Thunder? What the fuck is wrong with you monsters?
I agree with these people. Yeah, so it's very strange. Still no Jetsons, I will say.
Why did we not get the Jetsons? What about that's like the vibiest one.
They couldn't figure out how to get a robot to balance on one wheel. Mm. Oh my goodness. Speaking of the Jetsons, I guess? Was there a baby on the Jetsons? Because there's a baby in here.
Let's call him Elroy Jetson. What up, Liam? Hi, Leah.
Hello, little baby.
Oh my goodness. So precious. Someone got a bath. He's got his little mohawk. He's ready to go sleepies.
He's chilling. He's got those sleepy eyes.
Oh yeah, he's big time tired.
He's adorable. Wiped Sleep out. Well, Liam. We love you, little guy. We would never make you watch a Ghostbusters sequel, dude. Never. We'll never let that happen to you.
You know, wait. My promise to you, my son. I will never make you watch a Ghostbusters sequel. Sleep well knowing that fact.
It's on the record.
It's on the record. He's going to listen back to this in several years and be like, damn, Dad kept his promise.
That's a protective spell that doesn't let Finn Wolfhard cross the threshold of the home, I believe.
No, you have to invite him in.
Yeah, and who the fuck would do that, right?
Production studios, unfortunately. I'm not going to watch that fucking movie. Summer camp from Planet Bullshit or whatever.
Bro, I watched that movie trailer, and I was like, oh my god, ooh, I feel so...
You finished the trailer?
Oh, I had to. It was a captive audience. It was in a theater.
Oh.
But I just felt so validated. I will not be watching that movie. But Finn Wolfhard has made this horror movie about a really weird 25-year-old who still works at camp. And I was like, man, Finn Wolfhard's worst nightmare is me about 6 months before I started going to therapy. I feel so fucking validated that this boy is afraid of me. He's afraid of me at my weakest. At my weakest!
Listen up, Gen Z. Don't let this be you. Holy shit. You know, we rag on the guy, but, you know, brings to light some very positive things. And had one good season of TV, so.
God, he's not even good in his own show after that first season. He's, like, the worst fucking character. I was talking with a friend of the show, Russell McFarlane, who came and did this Fablemans with us last year.
Yeah.
And he
very
was
enjoyable episode.
Yeah, I loved it. Very enjoyable movie. Very enjoyable person. If anyone ever gets a chance to hang out with Russell, I highly recommend it. But he texted me out of nowhere and was just like, you're right, man. Finn Wolfhard is in everything. And I was like, dude, honestly, I know I'm a guy with a dog named Eleven, and I fucking loved the show. But I'm starting to think Stranger Things was a mistake. Like, I'm starting to think it did more harm than good in the same way that, like, Batman Begins was a great movie, but then we had not only the MCU spawn from that derivativeness, but also just 30 fucking years of gritty reboots and everything being understated. And I'm just like, I don't think it's a net positive. I think we'd be better off without it. It pains me to say.
Finn Wolfhard in The Dark Knight, and just... Two sides of the same coin. Get it? Because it's Two-Face in that movie. Anyways.
What are we doing? Is this George of the Jungle? All right. George of the Jungle?
Folks, George of the Jungle. It's a 1997 film that you can watch on Disney Plus. It is a Disney film. Denny, I will get us back on the rails, if I may, with our Critiker Review of the Week. Would you like to hear?
You know I would.
Well, I've got a bonus surprise for you. I actually also went to Letterboxd, so I've got two reviews of the week because I couldn't sit. I was like, which one do I like better? And the answer was, I'd rather do both. So, our Critiker review of the week. 9 out of 10, this user gave it, and simply said, this is feminism. Love it. And... from our friends at Letterboxd. This user gave it 5 stars and simply said, "The end credit scene with a gorilla, voiced by John Cleese, singing in Vegas wearing a bedazzled suit, is better than all of La La Land."
Bro, so like one of my notes is that I was like, so that's going to be how we end the podcast. We're just going to play that clip at the end of like, I was like, I described it as the John Cleese gorilla singing My Way. I was like, that is the movies for when roll credits, dude. Like when it's all over, I just want to go out to the John Cleese gorilla doing a Vegas performance of My Way. That is our spirit. We did it our way, the monkey way, Greg. We did it our way.
If we could put a bedazzled suit on every monkey, ape, gorilla, whatever, orangutan, boy would we. Especially if they could sing, but you know. Man. So, George of the Jungle. Let's talk about it. Denny, I might have missed it when I had my headphones off, but what's your relationship with old George, old Georgie boy here? Just the cartoon?
Well, I will start by saying George of the Jungle was not a Hanna-Barbera cartoon. It was created by J. Ward Productions, according to the Google AI.
Don't trust it.
I was saying, I can't remember if I saw the cartoon or the movie first, but I was definitely aware of both. And, like, to me, each made each other cooler, you know? Dude, this was a tape that I wore out when I was a kid. Like, this was definitely a VHS that we owned, that we watched all the time, that I definitely thought was hilarious, and I have not watched it since childhood. So this was, like, a really fresh-eyed return to it. You sighed like you didn't enjoy it, but boy did I. No, I loved this movie.
I'm sighing more in a sense of, damn, just copy paste what Denny said, like, oh boy, right. Okay, I know, same, yeah. I know that's right, etc. Everything you said minus the cartoon, I don't think I've watched it at all. I don't think I've seen any of it, but yeah, it was a tape that we had, and in preparation for this episode I was hoping my parents still had it, but they did not. They do still have our Flintstones VHS, which I watched even more. But
that movie is really good, and is like, we should do it. It's so much to talk about in that movie.
Yeah, as I got older, was I really just watching it for Halle Berry? Who's to say? I don't know. It's better not awaken something in me. But it did. So, a tape I wore out as a kid, but again, haven't seen it since I was maybe 12 or 13. I don't know. And when I went, I did ask to see the VHS tapes, and my dad was like, yeah, and you can take any of them you want, because our combo DVD-VCR finally broke after 24 years of service.
We salute you, fallen hero.
That's right. Now, I guess I'll have to house all the physical media from now on. All right.
Oh,
darn. All the Wallace and Gromit tapes, what am I going to do? All right.
Watch the fuck out of them. That's what
Watch them
do.
Again and again and again. Just like I used to. So, yeah. Where do you want to start? How are you feeling about this one overall?
Man, I wanted to start with this, Greg, because it's been a minute. I'm going to give this a Movies for Win official certified joyful movie. This movie was not just a movie that was joyfully made, but a movie that made me feel joy. I felt that it was a movie that took its comedy seriously. Like, I was consistently surprised at how much I enjoyed the writing and thought it was witty, and there was just so much to love. And so I'm going to call this a certified joyful.
Nice. I love to hear that. I'll co-sign the stamp and notarize it.
Hell yeah.
All right. Yeah, I love to hear that. It's not often we get on here and... Well, when's the last certified joyful movie we watched? I mean, Planet of the Apes is very good. I wouldn't call it certified joyful.
I think the last thing... Sense. I certified A Muppet Family Christmas as joyful, if that counts. That was in the Jingle Fuck.
Of course it counts.
I did The Producers with Matt Anderson as a guest. Fablemans. The Monster Club from that was Dairy Barry's pick in the Spookter Fuck. But I don't think the last one we did together. Let me see up here. I think Man, Dr. Caligari is the last thing that we together watched that we certified joyful.
Wow.
Yeah.
Nicolas Cage agrees.
Long fucking time ago, yeah.
No kidding. Well, yeah, in the same thread as Encino Man, how was it just watching Brendan Fraser in his element? Because I haven't seen Encino Man. How was it like watching those kind of back-to-back?
Man, like, so great. it really did just put me in the best mood. You know, I was honestly, like, the only bad part is I was like, well, I can't find anything else like this. You know, these two movies pair really well together. Man, I think when it comes to Encino Man, it's like when, like, the unlikable asshole in your script is played by Sean Astin, you can only have such a bad time, you know? It's so fun. And, man, I think, like, a word I think about a lot, a word I try to encourage in my clients' lives is levity. Things are so hard right now. Things are so heavy. Everyone is already living with their own personal baggage and their own problems and their own trauma and all this shit that's in their life. And we have so much more to worry about than we're used to worrying about. And it's hard to find levity right now, Greg, but I think to be healthy, we need to find a way to engage with levity even when we're in really serious situations. And these movies both made it really easy for me to feel levity, for me to just, like, kick back and be like, dude, there is nothing better for me to do than just watch this stupid movie. You know, like, I can just forget about shit for a minute. And again, Encino Man is like a, like, shitty movie that has a lot of charm. You know, I think George of the Jungle is a very well-made family comedy. What about you?
I haven't seen Encino Man. I haven't seen it. The Sean Astin being an asshole. I really like Thomas Hayden Church in this movie also being an asshole. He's great as an asshole. He's sounds just like Jason Bateman, I gotta say.
Did you remember seeing him on our Whataburger walls?
No. What?
That is UNT alum Thomas Hayden Church.
To school with Lyle. No way. Him and RoboCop.
Yep. They were UNT both on alumnus. The Whataburger wall. Here's another one. He didn't graduate, but Stone Cold Steve Austin is a UNT alum. Played on the football team and everything.
Holy shit.
So yeah, but Thomas Hayden Church, that's our boy. I'm more proud of him than so many things about UNT.
My go-to is always RoboCop and Mean Joe Green, so...
Oh, hell yeah.
I could talk about RoboCop all over again. But we're here to talk about our other alum... Our other fellow alumnus, Thomas Hayden Church. But yeah, I think I feel more strongly that this is a kid's movie versus a family movie. Mm-hmm. But like an older kid's movie...
Okay,
with
yeah.
Family-friendly jokes that definitely made my parents laugh, at least when we were watching it.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I think I mentioned last week that I had watched The Bad Guys, and I was like, damn, if I was, like, 14 years old, I think I would have fucking loved this movie.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's just, like, it's not for babies, and it's not for little kids, but it is for, like, a very specific age group where you're really starting to laugh at poop and farts.
Yeah.
And that's good.
I think what's, you know, the thing about being a kid is you don't want to watch stuff that's for kids a lot of the time. You know, like you want to watch the thing your older brother is watching. You want to watch the thing you're not allowed to watch. And I think this one is really happy to be what it is. And I just remember as a kid just being like, no, this is funny. Like Good Burger is funny. You know, like I didn't feel like Good Burger was for babies. I felt like that was a movie of my generation that spoke to my people, Greg. You know what I'm saying?
I do know what you're saying. And I think, unfortunately, a little bit similar to our Good Burger discussion, I found that movie kind of annoying. And I think, looking back on this one, I think I'm a little bit, you know, kind of depending on the nostalgic tinted glasses. But again, I didn't have a bad time watching it. So I'm here to talk about the joyful aspects of this movie with you, and I will fully stand behind anything you have to say about it.
Cool. Well, let me be a little critical. Mm-hmm. That was not a flying pile driver, Mr. of the Jungle.
Oh, no.
I caught that as a kid. I mean, like, he does, like, an elbow drop and shouts, like, flying pile driver! And as a kid, I was like, motherfucker, that is not a goddamn pile driver. For those who don't know, a pile driver is when
I don't.
Okay, so what you do is you bend someone over with their head between your legs, okay?
Yeah.
Then you stand them straight up.
Mm-hmm.
And then you sit down.
Got it.
In a real fight, yeah. In a real fight, it would kill you. You basically, like, put someone's head between your legs and spike it into the ground. It's like a finishing move. Undertaker has a special pile driver that he does called the Tombstone Pile Driver. For years, ooh, WWE banned pile drivers because they're fucking dangerous. Mm-hmm. But honestly, if you know what you're doing and the weight ratio is right, it's as dangerous as anything else. All that goes to say, that bugged the shit out of me even since I was a kid. I was like, dude, come on. I do really like Rubber Tree Always Good for Clothesline. That's a great joke.
Yes.
Other than that, I was also just hyped as a kid to see, like, wrestling depicted in this because... It was definitely, even when it was popular, like, I was literally thinking about earlier today. For those who don't know, the peak of the wrestling boom was basically 1996 to 2001. That whole rise and fall happened of it being, like, a crazy pop culture phenomenon in America. Hmm. That was definitely something for older kids that I wasn't really... It was weird. My parents just let me watch it, but they told me not to tell people that they let me watch it. And they, like... They wouldn't let me, like, wear my wrestling shirts to school. Probably a good call. Like, it was pretty R-rated at that time. Really not appropriate mm-hmm. for an elementary schooler to show up at an Austin 316 with middle finger shirt. But I just even remember, like, anytime there was a project where you could pick your topic, I knew that I couldn't really pick my topic. Because my topics always got rejected when I was, like... Well, I want to write about The Undertaker. And they'd be like, no, you have to do, like, a real report on something like San Francisco. And I'd be like, San Francisco is the most boring shit I've ever fucking heard of. Undertaker is an undead sorcerer.
Yeah. we got a big bridge and hills.
It's just always a big pop to see wrestling as part of something for me.
Hell yeah. And, yeah, there's several references throughout the movie. I really like when he's... wrestling the lion and, you know, the ding ding ding, like mm-hmm, the bell plays over. I'm like, hell yeah, we're in for a treat. I think that's the first time we really interact with George. I'm like, yeah. Oh, okay, we're here for a fun time then. I see. I like
yep
it.
Yep, dude. And like I always think about the concept of a hook scene. It's the scene when we meet the protagonist and they're supposed to make us instantly care about the protagonist, like, right away. Man, this movie was so good, not just at, like, endearing George to us immediately as audience members, but to circle back to Lyle, man, every line that motherfucker said made me hate him a little bit more. Like, they were just, like, so yeah. good at getting the good guy and the bad guy established quickly and making you feel something about each of them.
Yeah, there's a hook scene for both, and it works yep. both ways. Like, mm-hmm. you've got to really endear yourself to this guy and really... get it in your head that you don't like this guy.
Yeah,
actually.
Yeah.
And I'm over here just like, Leslie Mann is awesome. She's
hell
great.
Yeah. Hell yeah. Give me a Greg note. Oh, you're giving me one. Go
yeah,
for
kinda,
it.
Yeah, kind of to stem off that a little bit, I do like that. I think I didn't notice as a kid, but this time I was like, we haven't seen Lyle for like 40 minutes. This is kind of crazy.
Yeah.
I kind of forgot, or I guess I didn't realize at the time, like, how long we were without him. And yeah. it was crazy. It was very interesting. And it made me, like, the heel comes from out from under the stage, like, when he shows back up. And I forgot he like, joined a band of mercenaries or some shit.
He's they like, were vaguely, like, Nazi-ish, I felt like, too. Like, it was weird.
It felt like Eastern European mercenary kind of kind of thing going on. I don't know what was going on over there in 97, but, you know, probably not the coolest shit.
It was just so. it was clearly established that the character Lyle is very racist, and then you show up with a bunch of white people with Eastern European accents, and you kidnap a person, and it's just it gives Nazi is what I'm trying to say.
And what a way to say it, indeed. Yeah, I guess to go off a note specifically, speaking of henchmen, we've got our two hunters that are really in it for the ivory, you see. There's no white ape. Fine, we'll just take this elephant's tusks. Those two guys, I enjoyed them, but like the skinny guy with the English accent, this might be the first character that channels Tim Roth's performance in Pulp Fiction.
Do you mean Pulp Fiction or Four Rooms?
Pulp Fiction.
Oh, okay. The pumpkin?
Yeah, the overly done British accent guy.
Yeah.
He's talking the same fucking way as Tim Roth in that movie. Very, very funny.
I did not make that connection, but I'll definitely see it next time I watch this.
Just close your eyes and picture him saying those lines in like a diner booth, and you're going to be like, well, shit.
God, I'm trying to think of, like, you think a lemur's taking a bullet for the elephant? A lemur doesn't care about that ivory.
I'm doing a little Googling here on the side. I'm seeing that the narrator, I did want to give a lot of love to the narrator. I think the narration really goes over the top and has, like, it fits the movie really well. I think it's fits the tone great, like the very comedic but still serious kind of tone of narration that's also kind of, you know, breaking the fourth wall a little bit and telling some meta jokes. Keith Scott, he's the narrator, and he was a voice actor for a bunch of shit.
Nice.
Looks like mostly like Australian cartoons, but yeah, the guy killed it in George of the Jungle. Definitely my mom's favorite character. And we'll get into favorite lines later, but...
You know, the same thing stood out to me, though, because, like, typically when I hear a narrator at all, I'm just like, ugh, you know, like, ah, this movie's gonna fucking suck. There's a narrator.
Yeah.
Man, the narrator is, you know, like, in the same way that Arrested Development is the exception that proves the rule, right?
Oh,
like,
man. Yeah,
great
exactly.
Narrator show. Man, this is a narrator that absolutely, like, he's basically the glue, right? Like, the glue that ties it all together. And I love it so much. I was so happy with it. And I think that's also where we saw some of the movie's strongest writing. Like, he got a lot of great jokes in the script. Yeah.
I really like the one where Shep, the elephant, has the gigantic milk bone. And the narrator's like... Okay, the dog bone's too much. Lose it.
Yeah, that was, man, I wish, like, to young people who are watching this movie for the first time, I want you to know, meta was not done to death at this time, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Like, meta and, like, self-reflexivity, especially in a movie like this, where they're like, meanwhile on an expensive waterfall set, you know, like that... Like, now I hate meta. Like, I hate it so much. I'm just like, oh my god, we get it. We know that we're watching a movie. We're aware of tropes. Audiences have been doing this for generations now. We know that we know it's a movie. Shut the fuck up, Rick Sanchez. Anyway, I really... It's the same way that I was showing a friend of mine who's a little bit younger... Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind, and I paused in the middle of it. I was like, hey man, so like Manic Pixie Dream Girl wasn't like really done to death at this time. And he was like, I was wondering why people like this movie. I was like, yeah, this was like not annoying yet. You know.
Exactly. No, the kids gotta know. Let's be honest. And that's a movie I still enjoy very much, too. And I think that this one didn't have the meta humor. It didn't lean on it as heavily as I think some more modern things would. It's a sprinkling.
Seasoning.
A dusting.
Seasoning. I don't
sprinkle.
Want a main course of meta. I just want you to season it with a tiny bit where it fits.
a pinch and then do different kinds. We've got fourth wall breaks. We got a character arguing with the narrator. And it fits in, you know? It's not like, what's that movie we watched? The Dead Don't Die?
Yeah.
It was just like, kind of felt shoehorned in and didn't really feel like it was comfortably part of the story. Anyways, all I'm saying is it fit a little bit better here. And, yeah, rocked our minds in 1997 or whatever.
Well, like, this movie, it reminds me a lot of a now out-of-business wrestling promotion called Chikara. It's one of the coolest promotions ever. They had, like, a multiverse time travel arc. And, like, it, like, had some of the most insane storytelling in the history of wrestling. But they had, like, wrestlers that were, like, ants. Like, there was, like, Red Ant, Green Ant, and Worker Ant, and they were all part of the colony. And it was definitely, like, fourth wall breaking, like, but the audience was in on the joke, so, like, they would get really into the show, and there was, like, no cussing, and the audience would self-enforce that. They would chant, like, holy poop, and they would, like, it was meant to be, like, a family show, so they would, like, legit, if you, like, shouted a cuss word, the audience would be like, out, no. And they would, like, they would play along with all of the ridiculous, crazy shenanigans that were happening in the ring. And it was like, this takes pro wrestling, which has in some ways always exploited the audience and made fun of the audience. And it's like, it's based on the audience being fools for the product. This one said like, hey, y'all are in on the joke. We are going to do reckless abandon. This is basically going to be like an insane comic book version of pro wrestling, and you're all in on it. You know, kind of like the Muppets say, like, hey, you're in on it. It's just a fucking sock on a guy's hand. Like, but it's going to make you feel something in this very much. I think, like, it's not that the movie doesn't take itself seriously. It's that it, like, it very much invites the audience to join in the levity of it all. Like, I really think that these meta fourth wall breaks help us take ourselves a little less seriously and just kind of go along for the ride. Because it's basically like, dude, I'm not asking you to, like, for real give a shit, okay? Just, like, have a little fun with me is kind of what it's saying. And I really think it works.
It's like the Muppet Christmas Carol having RZA the Rat talk to you and crack jokes while Michael Caine gives, like, an Oscar-worthy performance behind him. Like, it's the same kind of thing. Like you said, invited to enjoy the levity. You're allowed to feel both emotions, different levels of investment, so it's still just there to have a good time. Mm-hmm. You'd think they'd be in conflict, but they not always are. Mm-hmm. Everything. Muppet Christmas Carol did it perfectly, but you know, we've already discussed this.
Yeah, it'll always be emulated, never replicated, that's for sure.
But you're damn straight.
What about the monkey of it all?
I was getting to that. I really wanted to ask. This is movies for when you want to see a monkey. How about these monkeys? We do a lot of, like, fart joke happens, cut to monkey doing a spit take and giving a laugh or patting his belly or something. It's a lot of, like, cut to monkey for punchline or exclamation mark to the punchline. And then also, just a lot of monkeys. It's not just the monkeys, though, right? It is a lot of well-trained animals. Yay. How about that toucan?
Yeah.
Holy crap.
Tukey bird, right? That's what it was called? Tukey bird.
Tukey bird, yeah.
I like Tukey bird.
We all did. Damn. And it's just, I don't know. It's great. That's a real lion. Holy shit.
Bro, and they even, like, they for real swung a Brendan Fraser body double off the fucking Golden Gate Bridge. That's a big budget shot. Like, that was really fucking expensive for them to do.
I was going to get to that. Is that, so, but it's just a stunt actor, right? Not like a mannequin or some shit.
I didn't do any research. I was just watching it. So I don't know. I might be wrong.
I was going to save this for our They Made a Movie segment. But yeah, first of all, it's the Bay Bridge, not the Golden Gate Bridge. They couldn't swing the Golden Gate Bridge.
Hey-o.
If I may. So
that was very nicely done.
I think this was definitely the first time watching it where I was like, There is a guy swinging from a bridge that people jump off of to be done with his mortal coil.
Talk like, about taste. I'm surprised the narrator didn't make a joke, to be honest.
Oh, man.
But talk yeah, about that, tasteless, man.
Talk about tasteless. It's us. Hello. but yeah, the monkey of it all. I like that we had very real animals, a CGI elephant, and then a few actors, including John Cleese, or I guess voiced by, I don't think he's really in that suit.
So awesome if he was, though. John Cleese strikes me as the type of dude to do it, honestly.
How old would he have been at the time? Anyways, just like, my thing here is I don't move. he would have been ripe young age of 58. He could have done it.
Shit, yeah.
He's only 85 now. I'm sure he could get back in that ape suit. Only in Vegas, though. Yeah, it's a good mix of, like, real animals, people in suits, CGI, which didn't age all that great, which, again, you know, we talk about Jurassic Park all the time. They did film a real elephant. Can we not also CGI the fake elephant to look a little bit better? But, you know, all the budget went to the bridge swinging, I guess. It does get to, that does bring up one thing that I don't like, which I think this movie kind of kicked off the trope of, if you want the animal companion in a movie to be funny, just make it act like a dog.
That's kind of true, yeah.
I didn't like it in this very much. I didn't like it in Tangled, where the horse was just
yeah,
a dog.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's I don't know. It's done to death, and I blame this movie for it. Just like I don't blame it for meta jokes, though, I guess.
Nah,
anyways,
that,
whatever.
That was back in Hell's a Poppin' era in, like, the fucking 30s. That's been around.
I'm rambling. What do you think of the monkeys? How are you feeling about these chimps, apes, gorillas, etc.?
Yeah, dude, I loved it. I also wanted to throw out, I forgot to say this in my what I've been watching, but Speed Racer movie with a monkey in it. I wouldn't say it's a monkey movie, but it is a movie with a monkey in it. And if we ever, it's a soft monkeys for win. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, it's on the poll, but it's yeah, maybe it's not on the poll.
It'll be
but
like
it
part
considered.
9 when we've done most of the monkey forward movies. You know,
that's right.
I think that the ape named Ape is one of the best characters in the movie. I really, really loved the effect, man. Like, that was like, you know, I'd compare it to the Ninja Turtles suits from the live actions.
I was gonna say that.
Right?
Exactly. Especially the mouth movements. But yeah, that's where I was going to go to.
Yeah, man. Like,
more expressive eyes, I'd say.
Oh, absolutely, dude. Like, this thing, like, it just looks like a fucking gorilla wearing, like, glasses. Like, it just looks like a gorilla, like, 100% real. Like, it has, like, subtle facial muscle movements. It talks very believably. It absolutely tricks the eye. It's a really, really good effect. They picked the perfect voice actor for the occasion.
Yeah.
I thought that it was just nothing but a movie enhancer. You know, this isn't... I would say that this is probably the least monkey-forward of this series, I would say.
Maybe so. Despite having probably the highest monkey count.
True, true. But
not
like,
screen time.
Ape is more of a supporting character than a main character. But, like, again, man, they made me care. Like, honestly... George and Ape and Doggy's Life and Tukey Bird and like they just seemed like it was so fucking chill out there. Like I was like, dude, what a vibe. I would live with them in their treehouse. I even was like I looked at their treehouse and I was like, so Disneyland has an attraction called Tarzan's Treehouse and it fucking sucks. Like the Disneyland like equivalent of this blows. I want to go to the fucking real George of the Jungle treehouse. Fuck Tarzan. Mm-hmm. Fuck these strangers like me. Who gives a shit? I want these other strangers like me. But
it's somehow better than me. Yeah.
Man, their whole way of life was something that I found myself emotionally upset that it was disrupted and taken from them. I did not like our poachers and our bad guys encroaching on what was essentially the ultimate bro slumber party, from what I could tell. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this is what happens when girls join.
No, she was based. She was based. It's like, it's what happens when fucking...
With her.
She brought a lot of white supremacists with her, was the real issue.
Oh, well, who among us, right?
Right. We've all got family.
I like that her name was Ursula. That's mm-hmm. funny. Mm-hmm. That could not have been a common name at the time. No. Yeah, this has got to be my first Leslie Mann movie. I thought she was awesome in this. I don't think I remembered until like I was getting ready for a rewatch here that was, in fact, the Leslie Mann that I know and love today.
Hell yeah. No, she was great, dude. She was a very, very likable character. I just think, like, they made us feel the right way about all these characters. They really got me there emotionally. And, again, this was just such a structurally solid movie. And that was not something I was really expecting. And I think, like, all the actors understood the assignment. Like, this was something that, like, seemed like it had a really unified vision and that... Everybody was enjoying, like, nobody seemed like they were going through, like, a miserable experience or anything like that. And, mm-hmm. yeah, man, like, I was very surprised at the competency of this movie.
Well stated. Yeah, and it's the big and also the subtle. You know, we get, like, when Lyle and Ursula... go down the wrong path and they get stuck. Eventually they wind up in the river, right? Mm-hmm. With the rapids. They go down like they fall into a cave with water, and then they go down like the slide chute. That's like a whole set with like a functioning water slide that just looks like it's part of a jungle cave, and it's on screen for 10-15 seconds. It's stuff like that. It's really cool. And kind of going back to like the swinging, you know, stunt double or whatever, there's the shot at the end when George saves them from said river. There's this really, it's the really funny shot close up on George of him like getting his cheeks blown by like 200 mile an hour wind. He's just like, his mouth is just flopping in the wind and all that. I hope the mic got that. Okay. And then, yes. And like, they do like a wide shot of, I don't know how they do it. I don't know if it's a miniature or what. It's just like, this is clearly a guy that looks like he's going 100 miles an hour with like trees between the camera and him. Like, I don't know if this is miniatures or like a mannequin or what, but it looked great. It's the caring that really makes this one just stand the test of time a little bit better than maybe some other movies from that era.
Absolutely.
Or I guess movies a little bit later and even now.
Or even movies of that same year. Case in point, Jungle to Jungle. Not very good. I gave it a failing grade. I did want to touch on one little note. I thought briefly that this movie had a really banging original song. Do you know what I'm talking about?
It's like the dance towards the end, right?
So it's not original to the movie. I have been jamming to it. It's called De La by Johnny Clegg featuring Savuka. But De La, D-E-L-A. It is a bop, dude. Like, it's like my exact type of music. But they just put some George of the Jungle xylophones in it to make it seem like it was for the movie, which actually really worked. It seemed natural to me. So I always like a movie with its own song. It's just a bonus for me.
Yeah. Oh yeah. And like, the less literal, the better, I guess I'd say. But yeah, I think it would fit really well. Didn't know that wasn't an original song.
Yep.
Oh man.
Is it Gimmick O'Clock?
It almost is. We do have to touch on one last thing.
Ooh, okay.
Brendan Fraser.
Love him.
Very nice of him to become the hottest person alive for this role. Very brave. I wish the whole movie was just him running with those horses.
Did you see the picture I posted of him and Leslie Mann on the Instagram page?
I don't think I did.
Dude, he just looks so fucking sexy in it. It's like a production photo of them, and he's just in loincloth and nothing else. He looks so fucking hot. Like, he's just so fucking attractive.
He's as of right now, I'm just seeing a whole bunch of Goosebumps stuff.
Yeah, dude.
Or Beetlejuice, not Goosebumps.
Hell yeah.
I'm seeing both, actually. Anyways.
He's just a goated himbo. Brendan Fraser is George of the Jungle. Absolutely goated himbo.
And I'm loving his comeback, honestly. Mm-hmm. I think he's just absolutely crushing it. You don't have to be the hottest guy alive to be the coolest guy alive. Yeah. So, happy for him. And I guess briefly also on my Critiker Review of the Week, this is feminism. How do you feel about this being a female liberation narrative?
Sure.
I do. Leslie Mann escaping the clutches of her rich family and escaping to the jungle to discover the true essence of joy in life.
She took agency. She rejected the families. We didn't even talk about her fucking family. That's crazy. That's like a whole arc. They like go to the city for a long period of the movie. We didn't even discuss it like at all.
Overbearing mom, like, to, you know, we talked about Arrested Development already. Lucille Bluth levels of just manipulative and overbearing.
Yeah. Yeah. Honestly, fuck yeah for her. I think if I don't know who gets to decide what's feminist. It probably isn't me. But if one wanted to call this feminist, I don't think I would object to it. Does it pass the Bechdel test, though? I doubt it.
I would have to really think on that. Because she does talk to her, and yeah, she only goes because a man drew her out of this situation. But I know she talks to her friend, but I think they might only talk about George and Lyle. I don't think this.
If it does pass, it's like on a technicality. There aren't like there's one notable female character, and she kind of exists in relation to men. So
that's right. All right, I think it is gimmick o'clock. There was a lot to talk about. There's a lot to see. This is a very eventful movie. A lot happens in this movie.
Indeed. Do we want to start with line or our favorite moment of Monkey Business?
The gimmick of the week. One last time for this theme. Denny, what is your moment of Monkey Business?
Greg, this is a watershed moment for movies for when. This was a real piece of monkey business that was done. It was when Ursula Stanhope, a scientist, used the terms monkey and ape interchangeably when describing a gorilla.
See, I forgot
that's all
about
the
that.
Proof I need. Our official position is that there is no distinction between monkey and ape.
I love it.
My runner-up was... Oh, go ahead.
She would know. She's a scientist. But what's your runner-up?
Just George's mating antics. They were fucking hilarious when he was just doing, like, gorilla mating rituals at her. That was really fucking funny.
Did you... Are you sure you threw the leaves?
Yeah. That was a great line. George threw leaves.
Excellent. My monkey business moment is a little more literal. It's when our little capuchin monkey is doing the Tarzan yell at the lion in an effort to dissuade bullying. Like, haha, you're such a piece of shit little monkey. You're the runt. You're the runt of this group. And he says, no, I'm not. I'm no runt. I scared the lion with my mighty jungle yell. And made friends that day. So,
hell yeah.
Love it for the little guy. Another little ensemble cast of monkeys just absolutely killing it in their brief on-screen moment.
Beautiful. Beautiful, beautiful. We love monkey actors. We really do.
We really do. More than most.
You know, favorite line was not easy. There were a lot of really great lines in this movie. I'll give a runner-up to they reacted with awe. Aww. No, not that kind of awe. That was really funny. I'll give another runner-up to every story gets to have a really big coincidence, and here's ours. I was like, you know what? I'm gonna let you have it. You can get away with it. But I had to go with what was easily my favorite line as a kid. It made me really throw my head back and laugh, and I think you know what I'm going for.
This is the part.
Bad guy falls in poop, classic element of physical comedy. Now comes the part where we all throw our heads back and laugh. Ready?
Ready? Ready.
That was, man, as a kid, that was easily the funniest part of the movie for me, and it hit just right when they got around to it. I was waiting for it, too. I remembered that part. I knew it was coming.
Stood up and applauded the film. Hell yeah.
Doing the gift clap. Yeah.
They did it. They really did it. Well, my favorite... Again, you were right. A lot to choose from, but I went with what was mine as a kid, and definitely my mom's if you were to ask her upon, you know, upon a rewatch, I guess. It's one you already mentioned. When they finally beheld the mighty Ape Mountain, they reacted with awe. Aww. I said awe. A-W-E. Ooh. That's better.
That was a great, great moment in the movie.
Love it. Fantastic. Good bit of fourth wall breaking meta humor, but not overdoing it.
Well, what is your score, my guy?
My score? Like I said earlier, kind of from the get-go, I do feel like this is more of a kids movie, less of a family movie. If you didn't watch it when you were 10, if you're not watching it with a 10-year-old, or if you are not currently 10, I don't feel like I could really recommend it to you. But I do have the nostalgia for it, so you know, I felt more comfortable on like a solo rewatch. But I don't think it's the best thing ever. I think it is for a much younger audience that I'm no longer a part of. But again, plenty of nostalgia. I gave it a 22 out of 40. I don't know. I'd probably give it several years before I watch it again, if I'm being honest. But I enjoyed it. I think there are way, way worse movies in general, and especially monkey movies from the 90s that deserve much less of a score.
Sure.
Much less of a second chance and that kind of thing, including one we already covered in this theme. So.
Yep. Well, I'm going to go with a rare disagree with Greg. I think this is more of a family movie than a kids movie. And
by all means.
Before I give this score, keep in mind, I grade by genre. So a prestige drama and a family comedy with the same score are not to be considered equals. You know what I'm saying? Like I'm saying,
yep.
I don't know how you want me to fucking score Citizen Kane and George of the Jungle on the same metric. I'm sorry. Like, I can't do those scales, you know? In terms of a family comedy, I gave it a 40 out of 50. I was very surprised at, I mean, like, if you really want to know if it's timeless, ask someone who's not a millennial, right? But to me, it had a timelessness about it that, I mean, I don't love everything I go back and watch. Jungle to Jungle fucking sucked. Like this was something that really, I had a lot of respect for the craftsmanship of this movie. I felt like, this movie it was something that, like, one of my professors said in film school was just like, you got to take what you're doing seriously. Even if you're making comedy, you've got to take making the comedy seriously. I think, I mean, like, it's like you said, there's elaborate set pieces that are barely used, you know, like money was spent on the small things in this movie. And, I think, man, just a screenplay this witty with this much spunk to it. I'm just a sucker for a screenplay like that. So I really enjoyed it. And I thought it was just, everyone was well cast. Everybody played their roles well. It was just a big success from my point of view.
I love to hear it. I don't mind you disagreeing with me one little bit, hell honestly. Yeah. So, yeah, that's where we land. Now, there is one more question that I do have to ask.
The big one.
As is tradition. We're not forgetting any fucking gimmicks this time, I swear. We're only getting better. We're only growing. I promise. Denny, what is the best movie for when you want to see a monkey?
So, does this include the original episode?
No, it does not. Only the last few episodes.
All right, that's a layup.
No rehashing.
Listen, dude, Planet of the Apes, and it's not even close.
Planet of the Apes, and it's not even close, is in fact the right answer.
Yeah.
It is, I funny enough, I guess the only, it is the only movie that we've covered in this theme, you know, this round of movies, that does not feature real, actual monkeys, apes, or whatever.
Huh.
It is all people in suits.
Huh.
But it is hands down, monkey paws down, etc., banana peels down, the best movie of the Banana Bunch that we just watched. So
I mean, it would be hard to, like, literally ever find a monkey movie that I thought was better than that. Like, I mean, like, the next runner-up is probably Dev Patel's Monkey Man, which I thought, like, fucking slapped. I really enjoyed it. I kind of was bummed that it didn't win our poll, but I think I gave that, like, a 43, you know, and I gave Planet of the Apes a 50. There's a big gap in the, in, like, that. It's just, it's an all-timer, dude. It's just an absolute all-timer of a movie.
It's like dinosaur movies, right? You've got Jurassic Park, which is S-tier, outstanding, fantastic, out of this world, fucking good.
Then Flintstones, which is like
and
a little better.
And then the Flintstones, the family version, just a little better, okay. And then it's the same thing. You've got like some of the most interesting creatures ever to be put on this planet, and we just can't make a fucking good one, except for the one time we super fucking did. And Planet of the Apes is the monkey version of Jurassic Park in the dinosaur realm. Like, even the sequels kind of suck shit, and then the further you go along, they really fucking suck shit. So
do you remember that insanely boring, I think it's just called Dinosaur movie that came out when we were kids?
I saw that in theaters.
Me too.
And I haven't seen it since because I still remember being very bored.
Dude,
2000 it came out.
It was a shit fucking movie, man.
Oh, I will say, actual close second, the original Land Before Time.
Mm.
But yeah, definitely not the fucking dinosaur movie. That shit sucked out loud. It was so awful.
Man, like, there was a Disney Animal Kingdom park was supposed to have this like insane fantasy animal land, but they were over budget, and they decided to instead make this shitty fucking dinosaur land because they thought that movie was going to be a big success. Sort of the bigger theme park travesties. We never got Mythic Kingdom turned into fucking Avatar land.
Hey, we still have the Waterworld stunt show. That's all I give a shit about.
I hope it's still running at Universal Hollywood. It's gotta be.
I will. Like, we really gotta get moving here. I gotta go to sleep here soon.
Alright.
Waterworld stunt show. Show is 16 minutes long and includes stunts on water. Is it still active? Well, it's on the Universal Studios Hollywood website as a thing that you can, a link that you can click on. Things to do. This is apparently still a thing you can do. So,
fun fact, the villain in the Waterworld stunt show in the 2010s was played by notable professional wrestler, the Fallen Angel Christopher Daniels, current AEW producer.
I've never heard of this person.
He's really respected. It's really cool. It's like insane that he was doing that with his stuff, with his free time, not wrestling. He was going and doing fucking Waterworld stunt show. He's the man.
I think I want to spend a long time in Florida. Hey. Hats off to you,
no,
King.
This is California, dude. This is California.
Oh.
It's never been at the Florida.
My apologies.
It's Hollywood, yeah. I've never seen it, Vanessa's seen it.
Oh, come on. I'm planning a trip in my head as we speak. All right. Speaking of speaking, we got to be done speaking. So, Denny, if you could please speak the catchphrase into the microphone, we can speak no more. Oh, except what are we doing next week? Hold on.
Oh, fuck. We got to speak
time
some
out.
More. Hold on. We're going to speak some
I
more.
I promised I was not going to forget any gimmicks.
That's not very like us, Greg.
I need a checklist. Fuck, man. All right, what are we doing next week? We don't have a movie picked out, but we have a new theme, and I have a pitch for the title.
Go for it.
If I may, I guess I was asking you, but I actually have the answer here. How do you feel about this? It's not Movies for Win blank. It is the Movies for Win Director Royal Rumble.
Oh my fucking God. I wish I could vote yes 10 times. Like, oh my fucking God, yes. the director Royal Rumble. Oh my God, Greg, let's fucking do this shit. You have put a smile on my face that I haven't had since I watched George of the Jungle.
Oh, yeah. And that was April. Now I'm cheering up your May. Let's fucking go. So let's we are going to be hitting the all-timers from some of the all-timers, folks. We're going to be doing... Should we spoil it?
We can give them the first. We've got the first picked out.
Are we doing mine first?
We don't have anything else. I'll go with yours.
That's right. All right. First in the ring. Ooh. By God, that's Akira Kurosawa's
music. Oh, my God!
He's decked to the nines, or should I say decked to the sevens and samurais.
Oh my God.
We're covering Seven Samurai next week from Akira Kurosawa. He was the first to enter the ring, and right now he's just on the stage, kind of waiting for someone to challenge him. Alone in the ring, first in on the mat, and first in our hearts. Akira Kurosawa, welcome.
Dude.
That countdown timer is going to be pretty long, because I'm going to be in Puerto Rico next week, so...
You know what we should do, though? Oh, good job on Puerto Rico. That's going to be awesome. We, instead of picking a winner, we should have the audience vote on eliminations.
I like that. I foresee certain directors' feet touching the actual ground first, though. So,
I do want to throw a side note. It's insane that this has happened twice recently. An overlap of wrestling and Kurosawa. AEW wrestler Big Bill recently said in a promo, "Call me Akira Kurosawa the way I'll go high and low for those titles." And I was like, new favorite wrestler. That's like the fucking coolest thing anyone's ever said in a promo.
New goats just keep coming out of the woodwork every day. I'm always saying this. All right, Denny. We're hyped up. If there's one thing I know, though, it's that you are the goat of the catchphrase. I'm 2 for 2 on transitions on the same episode, so let's actually do the fucking thing.
You're killing it.
Hit me.
For Greg, the not-so-secret stash Johnson. I'm Denny. Let's hope the meds work, Taylor. And this has been Monkeys for Win. We already bananaed you, Win. But you know what we didn't tell you?
See my badge? Just a phase, boy. Need you escape, boy. Need you stay.